husbands and wives have a solemn responsibility to love and care for each other and for their children. Children are an heritage of the Lord. Parents have a sacred duty to rear their children in love and righteousness.
We welcome you to Gospel Solutions for Families on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I'm Matthew O. Richardson, second counselor in the Sunday School General Presidency, and today we will be talking about being single in a family-centered church. I'm joined today with three guests, and I'm very excited about this topic for a lot of different reasons. And so I'm grateful that you're here today because I have experts on the topic to help us understand how we can be better, well, the way Paul said it, fellow citizens in the kingdom of God. We're joined today with Jean Tanner. Welcome, Jean.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
It's nice to have you here. And Emily Moore. Welcome, Emily.
Thank you.
And also David Marsh.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Now, we just went through that brief saying, here's your name, but, you know, we're more than just labels and names. We're individuals, so I thought it would be appropriate if just briefly, if you'll just introduce yourselves. That way we can get the real good stuff from the source. So Jean, let's start with you, just quickly.
Well, I'm Jean Tanner from Orem. Been single for 59 years, so I can probably say a lot of things about that.
I'm hoping you will. And Jean and I are friends, and we've known each other for a long time, and I'm grateful for you making time, and I know you have a lot to offer on this.
Thank you.
Emily?
Hi, I'm Emily Osgathorpe Moore, and I have been single for about 4 years. I'm a single mom, and I have two boys, ages 10 and 7. I was divorced just 4 years ago right now, so I've had that experience of being divorced in the church.
And we've known each other a little bit, but I know your father really quite well because
yes.
We work together, and
yeah.
And so I'm excited about what you'll share as well. David?
My name's David Marsh. I live in Sandy, Utah, and I've married, and we have five children, three of which are single still. One is 29, almost 30 years old, and two of them, twins, are 25 years old. And I also had the opportunity to serve as a bishop of a student singles ward up on the University of Utah campus.
Great. So. Well, as you can tell from those who are joining us today, that we have a lot of voices that can speak to this topic, and I think this is a very important topic. As with most experiences in the church, we have members of the church who are dedicated, want to be more dedicated, and in some cases, they're not quite sure what to do, how to go about it. What we can do to be able to help them is vital. And so here's my thought on this one, is we're going to be talking about what it's like to be single in a church that talks about family all the time. I mean, you watch the advertisements, you hear them on the radio, and there's so much of a focus. And some members feel that they're ostracized. Some feel that they're not included. Some married couples feel the same way. It's just a fascinating experience. So here's where I'm going to start with a quote from President Hinckley. He said, "Somehow we have put a badge on a very important group in the church. It reads singles. I wish we would not do that." That for me is an interesting statement in and of itself. You are individuals, men and women, sons and daughters of God, not a mass of lookalikes or do-alikes. Because you do not happen to be married does not make you essentially different from others. All of us are very much alike in appearance and emotional responses, in our capacity to think, to reason, to be miserable, to be happy, to love, and to be loved. That's a great quote. But this is where I thought maybe we could start in is exploring, and I hope you'll just chime in, is we have a tendency to put labels on individuals, and therefore sometimes we don't know quite what to do because we don't know how to act, interact, etc. Let me just throw that out. What's been your experience, or how do you respond to something like this from President Hinckley or this whole notion?
Well, I hate the label single because I think sometimes people think you're disabled or less than. But my experience is generally that other people usually feel more uncomfortable around me. It's not so much that I feel uncomfortable, but I notice that they do. And so I try to go overboard and make them not feel as uncomfortable. So
tell me more about this, Jean. How do you tell that they feel uncomfortable? Like what, for example?
Well, for example, just recently somebody said, you know, my husband and I would like to take you out to dinner, but we were wondering, what do you talk about? Well, I just thought that was kind of an odd question.
You mean, what do you talk about being a single person?
Going to dinner with them. Well, they talk about all sorts of things, you know.
You know, there's part of me here, I'm laughing about that, and there's a part of me that wants to kind of cry about that experience. It's like, come on, really? But they really are worried about that.
Well, and they want to be a good friend and you know, take care of what my thoughts and feelings, but they were worried that. And recently another person said to me, you know, we'd love to go do something with you, but my husband needs to have another man there too. He's not comfortable with going to dinner with just you. And I said,
not because you're a woman, but because you're a single woman.
Right. And he's worried he didn't have anything to talk to me about. That was a different one. That was another one completely. So,
well, that's fascinating. Emily?
Yeah, for me, it's a lot about observing people and really being aware. For example, I have a sister who has sat alone in church for 4 to 6 years because her husband's in the bishopric. She's not a single mom, but yet she struggled with all these little kids. And I've watched people come and sit by her, give her kids lollipops. There's a particular woman in her ward who's taken it upon her to kind of be that support for her. So for me, I see it more as an observation of people and situations that they may be placed in, whether they're single or married. You can always be in those situations. Your husband or wife may be away at war. And so I have found I was in a ward with where my parents live. And the average age is probably 70 in that ward. And so there was a lot of wisdom. And when I was first divorced, I entered that ward. And I was so impressed with how people responded to me. I had arms placed around me. I had hugs. I had eye contact. I had compliments, constant compliments from male or female saying, you are such a wonderful girl. What a great mom. Or when I struggled one week at church with my kids crying and I was trying to make it through,
right,
just a hug. You know, we see you're doing a good job. Way to keep coming to church. You can make it through. I remember those days. So I think a lot of wisdom, you know, they're 70 and they've had children go through the same thing and they have a lot of wisdom. And yet sometimes at my age, some people struggle with it just because they're unaware of what that situation is and what the person needs. I feel like you can't go wrong with love. You know, you can't go wrong with showing love, with inviting someone to dinner. I love to go to dinner. It's lonely being single. I let my married friends ask me out to dinner all the time with their husbands that I'm close to and feel comfortable.
Right.
And I just love it. I love talking. I love being around people. And I love being included.
This is really good. I love these comments. And you point out something that I think is really important. And it's akin to what President Hinckley was saying here is, you have a mother. You gave the example of a mother whose husband's in a bishopric, but really, at that moment, she's a single church mom. She really is. Or when you were speaking about this, I was reflecting on my own experiences. For a long time, I had a church calling that put me in a young adult ward, and so I wasn't even going to my home ward for 7 years. And when I came back, everyone realized that my wife wasn't a single parent. She's like, well, you have a husband? You know, and he's a member of the church. We thought he was either inactive, excommunicated, or you didn't have a husband. And I love this awareness, is being able to see the circumstances around us without having to see the label to define it, is to be aware of how do we help individuals to be able to come in. Really great observations. David?
Well, you know, I was thinking, I wonder if it would be helpful if we don't make marital status a major part of our identity. You know, we're certainly at a very basic common level, we're all children of God, whether you're married or divorced or never married or whatever. You know, it's part of our identity, but maybe we don't have to make it the most important part of our identity, because I think when you do, whether you're single or married, you start to get these weird kinds of behaviors and interactions within each other, you know. So
And the reality of it is we are dealing with these, and that's why I'm so grateful that you've come to help us understand, and those who are listening, either provide support for them if they identify with one of us or another. But we're all disciples. We're all Latter-day Saints trying our very best to live the gospel of Jesus Christ in our everyday living. And so I'm hoping that they might listen and they might hear, and we might be able to say, hey, wait a second. And then at the same token, we might also say, oh, I have done that actually, and I should stop doing that. As a matter of fact, I think in some cases, individuals, this is a hard thing to say because it could be misinterpreted, they're ignorant. And that's not that they are less qualified or that they are stupid, but not at all. They're just not aware.
Yeah, having been married for 8 years, I was not aware of what someone is going through when they're in my position. And to be honest, I count myself as one of those ignorant people. I probably put a wall up, or I probably thought I had nothing in common. But gratefully, I have been in this position, and I have so much more compassion for people now because I have no wall. People are people, and all people have needs. And in Gene's situation, they probably would have had a great dinner. I mean, they wanted to go to dinner with Gene, but then all of a sudden the label came up and the wall came up. And if we can just take the wall down and just say, I really like Gene, I want to go to dinner with Gene, there doesn't need to be a label, it would change dramatically.
Such a good point. So how do we do that? How do we start to take labels down?
I think one of the ways that's interesting to me is there are a couple of things that are extra hard to do as a single person. And I think going to Ward Temple night is hard when everyone is there as a couple. I think it's so great when people in my ward have called me and said, hey, do you want to ride with us to Ward Temple night or state conference? When you go, that's a pretty massive group. You feel pretty alone at those big events like that. And so those are nice things that people have done for me in the past, and I'm very appreciative that they're sensitive to that.
See, I'm glad you say this, because some people would say, well, I don't want to make this like you feel like you're a charity case or something like that. But you're saying you appreciate that, and it's nice to be naturally included.
It's nice to be included, but also just be willing to say, if they say no, it's okay, because not every single person likes that. I'll be sure to tell you that right up front. Some people don't, and I consider myself a pretty healthy, I don't stay home and I'm sad. You know, I get out and do. I'm a believer that you have to be a contributor out there. You have to go out and be with other people and put yourself forward if you want to have friends. You know, I have a good friend in my ward, and we're about as opposite from day and night as it comes. And the difference is she has 7 children, and you know, I can't call and ask her to go to lunch with me. That's pretty much an impossibility. And we sort of found a happy medium that we could be friends, but I go over to her house on Monday at lunch sometimes, and she gives me Sunday leftovers, her leftovers from Sunday dinner, because she has such a big family. And otherwise, you know, she feels kind of lonely in her own way. And so I think it's just reaching out to others.
This is nice. One thing that you said also I think's nice to highlight at this point, and ironically, it reminds me of one of my children. We were talking about this the other day. He's in high school, and sometimes he feels a little bit lonely because he's not included. In today's society, as you know, when you're not included because of all the things that are with social media, as people are doing things, you see pictures of them, they're like, wait a second, I wasn't invited. And I remember as a parent saying to him one time for a particular activity, well, you know, you probably wouldn't have said yes to go to that activity. And he said something that was very important, and I hope that this is a proper parallel. He said, it would have been nice if I had the opportunity to say no. is for him, he said, I wouldn't have gone, but I wanted to be invited just to say no, because that meant that I was at least thought of. I was included at least in the process and valued enough to be invited. And then I would have said no anyway, but it's the thought.
Right.
Does that make sense?
I agree.
Okay. Great.
Well, I think, too, there's something about when you asked me to come and do this, I immediately went to several of my friends who are single and my children. And one of the common themes that came up with them as I asked them, help me understand, you know, the issues that you're dealing with, was we need to help people overcome this us and them attitude.
Okay.
You know, we're all in this together. Like I said earlier, we're all children of God. We're all on the same covenant path. And there's not going to be any blessings denied anybody who's a faithful member of this church. And so let's overcome this us and them kind of an attitude that seems to be out there.
That's really good. Really good.
I think where I stand, I have children, and I think a nice gateway to get into the us and them sometimes is through the children. I think sometimes we're a little less afraid if they're 7 instead of an adult, maybe. And I've seen people reach out to my children, and I see their hearts open. And as you show love to children, maybe it'll be a little bit easier to show love to adults. I think just that same idea of just opening up and sharing and loving people never fails.
That's great. Give me some real life experience of how sometimes people might say things that is not even on the horizon, that, you know, you should have thought that one through a little bit. Or I'm not looking for bad examples necessarily, but more in the spirit of how do we help people be aware. For example, in some situations with church meetings, we'll find that there are a lot of men in these church meetings. And I don't think it's intentional, but sometimes the person that's conducting will say, "Welcome, brethren, to this meeting." And you might have 3 or 4 women in the meeting. And some might be offended by that, and some might be feeling sad by that, and some don't even – they're so used to it, they don't even think about it. I've been in some circumstances where in like that setting where the woman will go up and chastise the person conducting and say, "You know what?" And I'm thinking, you know, I don't know if that brother that was conducting meant to do that on purpose, but it got into autopilot. So this is something that happens quite a bit. And this is what happens when we're talking and you can't have the visual, since we're not doing television here, is no one can see the faces of those that are sitting around the table here talking. And you guys are all giggling and laughing and smiling and saying, "Oh, been there, done that. I don't know how many times." So it's obviously something that is happening a lot. And I'm wondering, how can we help individuals be more aware? And sometimes we have to point out example and say, for example, and then we'll say, oh, I think I've done that, et cetera. So help me with this. Give me some thoughts.
All right. Well, I really like to keep offended and hurt in 2 separate categories.
Okay, say more on this, because I think this is very important.
So very early on, I personally was offended because I had paid my tithing all year on the widow's mite. I had no income. I had been a stay-at-home mom for 8 years, and the tithing came out with my former husband's name on it, and I wasn't on there, and I wasn't even married to him, and I wanted him to change it, and they said, "No, we're not going to." And I said, "You know, I really need it changed, because I really," and I could tell they just didn't understand.
Right.
And really, honestly, that's probably the only time I ever even remotely got offended for 1 minute. I don't get offended easily. I think being offended is your problem. And if you're offended, you know, the doctrine of the church is that we need to be married and have beautiful families. And that is a beautiful doctrine. I've been in that, and it's wonderful. And that needs to stay. That won't change. So to those who are offended, I say, you know, read a talk on forgiveness and, you know, move on in life, because the other person doesn't care. You know, they don't even know they did it usually. But on the other token, people can really get hurt. And I want to give an example of my son. I'm the primary chorister.
Okay.
And on Father's Day, we were practicing songs, and we had 2 songs, and we'd been doing it for a couple weeks. And as that week came, my son looked at me and said, "Mom, will you please not practice that song today? I can't do it. It's just too hard." And so there I was singing, "I'm So Glad When Daddy Comes Home," and leading the music, and tears were streaming down his face on the back row for my 10-year-old. And I'm still trying to keep it together. And all of a sudden he had to actually leave because it was so hard for him. He had to go to the bathroom for a minute. After church, we had to sit down and we had to talk about it and hug him and hold him and say, "You know what? Your dad doesn't come home and he doesn't come to church. And it's probably hard to get up there and sing that every week." And I think if people could understand that holidays can be very rough for single people. You know, Mother's Day, we had a mother pass away who was a mother of 6 children, and 3 weeks later, they were up singing for Mother's Day. That couldn't have been easy for those little kids. And I think at Christmas time, it can be difficult. It can be lonely as everyone's with their family. So if we can actually be a little more aware during the holidays to children and to singles, to invite them and have them in your lives. You know, I've had friends invite me to a Christmas Eve movie at 11. So I've gone with my family, but then I have to go home alone. Hey, come to a movie with us. Just little things around those holiday times. Those are times when people can feel a little alone and hurt.
This is really good. I like this concept of being aware. I think that this is probably a difficulty for all people in all circumstances, is we get so busy in our lives that it's difficult to see outside of our agenda or our to-do lists, our everyday taking care of. But I like what you're saying is be aware that holidays might have a significant experience. I was talking to a widower who said that his most difficult experience was not his wife's birthday, it was Mother's Day.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it was because of traditions, and now it was that they weren't there anymore. And he felt so absent, and almost the way he described it, he said, I felt like I wasn't me anymore, because that kind of was a defining moment for him. But a lot of people weren't aware. They never even thought that that would be a difficult time for him. And as a result, we kind of go through passing out whatever it is after the sacrament meeting or whatever people do. And for him, he said, I would have just liked someone just to say, you're doing okay. This must be a little rough, Jean.
Well, you know, when you ask about examples, last year my brother passed away, and someone came up to me at the funeral and said, so are you the old spinster in the family?
I said, boy.
Well, I'm the spinster. I'm not sure I'm that old.
You know, and touché, well said.
Yes. Well, you know, and so we try to make light of those things. But I think sometimes just being cautious about being too personal. You know, I hate the question, oh, you're such a neat person. Why haven't you ever gotten married? And, you know, I want to say, well, how much do you weigh? You know, it's just one of those questions you don't ask a single person, really. Or, you know, we don't ask their weight or their age, you know. It's just one of those impolite, it's a bit intrusive. Now, if they really care and they've been having conversations with me, I don't mind that. But, you know, when you talk about examples in the ward, I see that with sometimes they always call husband and wives to give the prayer in Sunday school, or, you know, they've tried to go away from that, I know. But sometimes it still happens, and they're just unaware.
And so it makes individuals feel excluded because of the patterns, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, they feel a little bit excluded because there's a pattern, but I think I'm a lot like Emily. I think you choose whether you're going to be offended or not. And I learned years ago, it's kind of like if you believe the first vision, you either believe it or you don't. And then you don't. If you don't, the gospel's not true to you. Or same with the Book of Mormon. If you've read the Book of Mormon and you believe the Book of Mormon is true, then you live the gospel and you do everything you can. And that's how it is. Really, I think if you know the gospel is true, you recognize that this lifetime on earth, and I love the example of the string in, you know, we did that in Young Women's, where they'll take a string and run it all the way across the parking lot and put a little tiny string in the middle of that and say, this is this life. And if you recognize the eternal consequences and perspectives of marrying wrong or not marrying the right person, you get that this life here on earth is a very, very short time.
Very short. Very short.
I wanted to say something, too, what I learned with being with the young adults for 3 years student singles ward was that these people are gifted and talented. These people. I mean, you know, I'm talking like doing the us and them kind of a thing. But I mean, they ran that ward. They were the Elders Quorum presidents and the Relief Society, and they would prepare activities for 250 people week after week after week. So they're very talented. And then, so I guess what I've learned from that is, just because that they're single doesn't mean that they are slated for only certain callings. You know, that we ought to consider them. I have a friend who is single, and she was recently called as the stake primary president. Well, she never had children. She's never even served in the primary. So when the stake president called her, she said, I don't know if I can do this. And so he started talking to her about her desire to serve and her testimony of the Book of Mormon and the gospel. And these are the qualifications to serve in this calling as well as any other calling. And then she said, when he set her apart, he said in the blessing that she had been prepared for this calling. And for the first time in her life, she said it dawned on her that all the experiences that she had had in her life helped prepare for this, and that being single the experiences she had as a single person were just as powerful and effective in preparing her for that calling as any married person might have had. And that was something profound for me to learn.
This is a very good insight. I mean, I can't help but think of how many scoutmasters have been called in the church that never were scouts before.
Yeah.
But it didn't prohibit them from being called.
Exactly.
You know? And I love this because it accentuates our opportunities as individuals to be able to serve. And many times God will call us to callings, not because we're the best, nor the most qualified, nor the most experienced, but because he wants us to do something, and it's in that element. You said that so nicely, David, and I think that's such an important part. And I can't help but think of an experience of in my own family where Ardeth Kapp, who was a former Young Women's General President, and all the good that she had done, and she was not able to have children. And some people say, well, how could you do this, et cetera, and stuff. But I remember we take our children up on their first experience to go to general meetings. And in those days when they had the general young women's meeting, my wife took our daughter up to the conference center, or actually the tabernacle at the time. And she happened to be sitting next to Ardeth Kapp. And Sister Kapp put her arm around my daughter and said, you know, I wasn't able to have children. And would you mind very much if I pretended like you were my granddaughter today? Mm-hmm. And put her arm around her. And it melted my daughter's heart. It endeared her to Sister Kapp. And for me, I just thought, oh, she is such a wonderful woman that is teaching us so many lessons. So I like what you're saying. And I guess I bring that on the other side is we should never fear being able to participate because we feel that we're lacking of an experience, for our Father in heaven will help. Any reactions to this?
Well, in fact, sometimes you have more time because I have found that I actually have sometimes more time to serve because I do have more time. I mean, when you're single, you're alone a lot. And what a better way to fill your time than going out and serving other people.
This is nice. Good.
Well, I recognize that, too. So when you have time, I try to think about who I might know in my own ward that might be lonely and just give them a call. There's a good friend of mine that told me a little trick that her dad does. He's the candy bomber, actually. Every Sunday, he calls 10 people. And, I thought that was such a great thing to do, to reach out to others. And that's so important to forget your own life, because generally Sundays, I think, are the most difficult day for seeing many single people. And, I thought, well, I don't know if I could do 10 calls in a Sunday, but I can email or call somebody every day. And so that's how I've tried to reach out, is I try to email or call one person in my Relief Society every day.
This is really good. I'm learning so much from this. And so this increased awareness in some ways is looking outside of yourself. I find this helps me regardless of what hat I'm wearing. I mean, as a married person or as a father or as a individual disciple, is looking outside and being able to act upon that. Boy, this brings to mind that's a key component of the gospel of Jesus Christ, is serving others and being aware of others regardless of your season in life, etc. Well, sadly, and we're close to out of time here, and it goes so fast. We start talking about things, my mind starts racing, my heart starts to pump a little faster as I contemplate what has been said. But just before we close, and fortunately, we have another episode on this topic where we can explore a little bit in more breadth and depth. Any parting comments as far as, especially since we've been focusing so much on being aware and acting out in that situation, not being offended, any just last things that come to mind that we need to say before we close this episode?
Yeah, there's not enough time for us to say all the comments that people have said to us that are offensive, because they have been said. But they were said before I was single and still this day. I had a friend who just lost a baby and people came and said very offensive things to her. And you just cannot go wrong with a hug, a smile, I love you. So if you're tempted to say some random comment, maybe just keep it to yourself and look at someone, whether they're married, single, divorced, and just say hi, smile at them, say I love you, and that will solve a lot of problems.
That's nice.
My mom taught me when I was a young girl, if you love the gospel, take no offense. And I've tried to incorporate that in my life and just really get that most people mean well. They really do mean well. And just love them for who they are. And maybe their social skills aren't where they should be or sensitive to what you need in your life. But I think that's the most important, is just take no offense.
That's nice.
You know, I'd just say, I'd go back to this idea of don't make your marital status a big, you know, the big factor of your identity. That, and if you want to get to know someone and become a friend of somebody that you see in the ward or the neighborhood, then go do it. And their singleness or their marriedness has really nothing to do with that. It's just a genuine desire to be friends with everybody and to reach out to everybody.
Oh, these are such good comments. And now the real trick is to take them not just to heart, but to take them into action. And so I appreciate all that you have shared, and I look forward to our next episode. You have been listening to Gospel Solutions for Families on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.